Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hello, everyone.
And Ash Millman.
Hello.
Now, we've already done our blind ranking of the actual, objective, clearly respected by the world games of the year. And you can go and find the video for that on the channel. But basically, the whole point of that was that everybody got to blind rank their favorites, which assigned different points to them. Number one was 20, etc., etc., from their top 20 candidates of all the year. And then when we got to the top 10, we revealed all of that stuff. But I thought we could just do a host of different podcasts, cherry picking the best things to talk about with some of the best people. So one is on Resident Evil 2. So as an opening question, why did you guys have it as your game of the year? It ended up as game of the year overall, but it's pretty damn good.
Yes. I think, simply put, it's probably one of the best remakes for a video game that exists in the current industry. Mm-hmm. I feel like, in terms of the amount of love that the dev team poured into it, the amount of respect that they paid to the original as well, but also advancing it enough so that it felt like a very fresh experience, even for veterans alike. I honestly cannot say... I can say a lot. I can say some bad stuff about it, but it is overwhelmingly positive.
Right. Did you get the platinum on it? You did a
I
lot
did
on
indeed.
This thing.
I absolutely lived on this game for about a month and a half, and I was doing lots of speed runs. I was watching tips. I was trying to get through every single one of the extra DLC mode things they added out. Honestly, I haven't gone back to it since. Mm-hmm. That would be my one negative, but we'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah.
But in terms of just the experience from start to finish, I left it thinking to myself, oh, I've played through this campaign mode for 3 or 4 times back to back. I'm going to go and do another one tonight. Like, it just, it's because it was each campaign, once I whittled down the hours, it only came to about sort of like 2 hours, one
once
hour
you get
30.
Used to it, you can absolutely like fire through it. Like, it kind of does promote like replayability. How much did you get through it?
I finished it. I loved it. I really like it for just a short game that has everything that you want in it. Like, it's a good 12-hour campaign, like the first time you play it, maybe not 2 hours in one night, Julian Gill. But a good 12 hours from just the Leon campaign, and you get the Claire one as well. So I just think it's a wonderful little tight narrative and has loads of fun like puzzles as well as combat. Mm-hmm. I think the way that it balances tone along with fun, innovative gameplay is really good. And coming at it as a new player to the Resident Evil franchise, which I feel like balances out your like old school knowledge of the ones that came before.
Uh-huh. Was this your first Resident Evil?
Yeah, this is my first one.
Wow, that is fascinating.
That's mad.
Because it's weird, in the current climate, you never get games that do the like puzzle-based progression, or at least not that much anyway, especially in something that's like being a horror or like a with shooting elements or whatever. Did that stuff stick out? Like, as we're like, oh, go find these 3 coins, then go find this weird bone key and whatever.
I I always expected Resident Evil to be like Call of Duty with zombies, you know what I mean? Like, I had this really weird impression of it that I just hadn't challenged.
Because you've seen the trailer for Resident Evil 6.
Like, I just hadn't challenged it from all of the recent Resident Evils, and I knew the old ones were classics. Like, I played bits of them, but I'd never gone all the way through properly and seen, like, friends play them and stuff. But, like, I'd obviously just warped it in my head to something that it wasn't. So actually getting into it and being like, okay, no, this is a really measured puzzle-based game with a bit of zombie avoiding rather than, oh my God, okay, let me hack my way through these liquors, was really interesting. And like I say, I've said before, like, it got me into the franchise of Resident Evil as a whole, because I was like, oh, okay, here's my introduction point. Let me go and have a little dab with all these other things and see what I can get from it. So it's like, it's just a fantastic game for introductions and for veterans, as you
So I was going to mention, like, they obviously, like, overhauled the way that it controls, the way that it looks and everything. But, like, one of the things that used to be a staple of RE was always this, like, isometric camera or, like, really specific camera placement that, like, kind of got, like, it kind of clashed with some of the tank controls, and, you know, you're holding up as your character runs off one perspective,
and then
you run the wrong way when it comes to the next thing. But, like, it's more for duels, I guess. But in the same time, it's like, what kind of made you check this one out? But, like, that difference between isometric horror versus, like, over-the-shoulder stuff, do you think that is just a way better way to do a Resident Evil game?
I mean, it's like comparing two different things. It's almost quite weird thinking of this as being the Resident Evil 2 remake, because it is so different to how it plays. Now, I will always have a soft spot for the early Resident Evils because that fixed camera perspective, not being able to see all of your location, not having control, is a perfect way to create a sense of fear and dread within the player, because you then put a noise that's outside. You can, what's it called when it's not part of the scenery, but it's...
the whole diegetic
That's
thing?
The one, yeah. So, so you've got some sound that you know is in the real world, but you can't see where it's coming from. You then round the corner and boom, there's a zombie. Boom, there's something horrible to look at. And you're like, oh, wow, that is shocking, because it's like a movie. Whoa. It's like, whoa.
Look at this square man.
And to be honest, I'm...
Hey, back in the day, that was terrifying.
I'm probably one of the few people that really loves that, those tank controls.
Because I'll stick up for them too.
I think that they're absolutely brilliant. In fact, it was one of the bugbears that I had when it came to the first Resident Evil remake that they did, in that they said you can either play it with the new controls, which were like run around and using the analog stick, or the tank controls. And I was like, why is it defaulted to these new controls?
It was
put it
back weird...
to the, it's still a fixed perspective. Put it to the tank controls.
Yeah, the tank thing's strange, because it did contribute to, like, the horror feeling, because it was like, I can't get away, oh my God, like, I'm trying to shake this thing off me or whatever.
I mean, it makes you look like the worst trained special order forces in the world if you're running on, like, hold on.
It's going to rotate.
Let me line up my shot, brother.
Also, back then, you had no idea if it was actually going to hit, like, land on a shot. You had no aiming reticle. There was just nothing at all.
Right, okay, so we had a discussion about how much you loved the Resident Evil 2 shotgun. Once you got that and, like, fully upgraded it, and you just start, like, running up stuff and, like, by head.
Yeah.
In the original one, when you're playing that, you have to wait until they are right in front of you and then aim up at the last second and just blast them apart. It was terrifying because you're like, oh God, this is...
Just holding on to your gun like, I'm going to shoot you at some point.
It's happened to me before. I was over at my cousin's house when he first got this game back in, like, 1996, I believe, for the first Resident Evil.
Yeah.
When he got that, he was like, oh, come and have a look at this. And he missed the shot. And I remember him going, oh, like that. And I was still like, oh, I don't like this thing.
Because then you get locked into the whole, like, the zombie gets a hold of you. And then it's like, oh my God, I can't get it off me. And it's like, I'm not fully, like, comfortable with the controls. All that stuff used to just work together. But like I said, they've done such a great job of, like, upgrading all that stuff. Because they do make you way more capable as a player in this. Mm. Like, you know, you can turn on the spot and you can nail headshots and you're more comfortable. But for me, the horror comes more through some of the atmospheric stuff. Like the first time that you unlock, you, like, make one of the shutters go up to the right side of the building and you go down one of the corridors, and all you see at the end of the corridor is, like, this moonlit window with a zombie at the window, and the shadow casts all the way down the corridor back towards you. It's so I can't think of the word cinematographic, I was gonna say cinematic is the word that I want, but it's, you know, it invokes all those, like, old school, like, zombie horror films and, like, it's almost like a jump scare, but, like, a dynamic jump scare, because whenever you turn to see that, that immediately hits you.
It's that
I love all things like that.
It's like one of the very first scares you get in the original Resident Evil is when you encounter the liquor in the liquor corridor,
and
you,
and you
hear the droplets of blood, and you go down, and then Leon looks up, and his little plasticine face that he had because of Resident Evil PS1 graphics. But in this version, in the remake, obviously you hear it, and you hear the clacking of the nails, and it just suddenly comes out of nowhere, and you're like, blooming hell.
You get, like, a little cutscene with it, don't you? Because it's one of the few points where it actually goes, okay, here's, like, a mini cutscene whilst you're in the middle of doing, like, actual walking down the corridor. Like, it's the smallest one, and then I was like, what the hell is what's this whole thing? Like, just another zombie. zombie, and then it drops down and does a big lick. And it's
I can't think if it's universal that I think everybody encounters the first licker at the same point. It's the corridor on the top floor.
By the Stars office, I think.
Yeah. And it's like that bit when you open the door and you know it's in the corridor ahead of you somewhere, but it's all smoky and like the window's broken in, there's rain there and everything. Like that is like masterful horror, like for me. Like, because you really have to like super slowly walk, and you can't crawl, but you crawl your character. You move him, like feather it so slowly.
It was when you find out in the remake, especially, that the lickers can't see you if you walk because they have no eyes because their brain is like obviously blown out of their head. But there's that lovely bit where you go back down into the police station and you go down to the right once you've opened that shutter you're talking about and you have to go back through that area again, and you know that the zombies climbed through the window last time that you came down, so you're like, right, I'm ready for that. But as soon as you go there, you hear the little clack, 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 and you're like, wait, what? And you have to run and got them chasing you and the zombies, and it's utterly
It made me think of like, I mean, like when you like chase a spider in your room and you lose it for a bit and you like turn around and it's right there and it's like, oh god, it's like waiting. Like there was a bit in that part of the environment where you're walking through the corridor and I could hear it breathing, but I couldn't see it, and I turned around and it was on the roof above me. I had that like full on like, oh, there's a spider in the house like style reaction to it, which is just awful. But did you guys do the thing where you expended like most of your inventory to kill one, or did you always try and get past
it? I was proper like, to begin with I was like shoot, and then I realized oh my god, ammo is really limited. Like, I don't know what I'm doing here. Like, I kept trying to find gunpowder, just squish it together, be like, please get me through. Because I kept trying to run past zombies and not do it properly.
Really?
Yeah. So try and run past, get grappled, be like, and then try and like stab them and everything. And I was like, there were so many that just had bits of my equipment like in them, like, that weren't dead. Yeah. But, like, I was like, I need my knife back, please, sir.
That's great.
But yeah, no, my whole experience of the Resident Evil narrative was panic, like blind panic all the time. And then once I went through it again, I was like, right, let me approach this in a measured way. Let me shoot a couple, or maybe fire something that like makes someone go over here, like have a look around. But yeah, initially it was blind panic, shoot everything, use as much ammo as I had. Like, if I have it in my pocket, I'm gonna use it, like sort of thing. Then it got to the point with all the dogs in the bit where you're in the car park. And I was like, I've got no guns, got no weapons, I don't know what I'm supposed to do here.
Like, we kind of did that on the we did like a challenge DLC stream where we tried to get through, because they ended up releasing some of that stuff as DLC, like how far can you get on these certain areas. And that was all about like ammo conservation and making sure you're nailing headshots and stuff, which like you kind of stumble into over time. I think one of the best things is that you get comfortable as Leon and Claire. You get better at the headshots and shoot them in the knees to take them out and stuff. Well, it's just great.
There's an argument to be made that Resident Evil 2 as a gaming experience, the remake, is fantastic, but as a point of horror within the series, it's actually one of the lowest points because it's overexposure. People are saying that this is a much more action, adrenaline-fueled thing, where if you actually look back at the original game, that was at the point, the apex of its fear creation. Like, it was a genuinely scary game for the time. Then Resident Evil 3 came out and started moving things towards the action spectacle. Now, it's kind of like, oh, you're walking through a courtyard with three lickers there, and you're just walking past them like nobody's business because you've done it so many times. It's kind of like the fear is dissipated because you're almost like overwhelmed with like, oh, it's run now, go this way, like it's bang. Like,
there's a ton of that at the beginning. I quite like that you do get comfortable with aspects of it over time, because initially you're freaking out at every little thing.
Time that I was like, when the body falls down the stairs in the first corridor, I was still like,
my shotgun.
But I quite like that, like over time, like it is like a horror character in a certain scenario that you do get more comfortable. It's like, okay, like I'm okay with these things. I'm okay with the zombies and the lickers, and I think I can handle Mr. X, and we'll get onto him in a bit. But like, I like that they always drip feed you something new. Like, I was going to talk about like that difference between the slow burn stuff at the start and then the full on action fare towards the end, because I like the ramp up. I like a game to go somewhere over time. But at the end, like, you know, you do have a couple of big monster fights. It's always against Mr. X, but you have these big big sort of like beastie monster fights a couple of times in the whole campaign. And at the end, you're just fighting that giant eye thing that you can just shoot over and
William
over again.
William Birkin's He's a Burke, isn't he?
Yeah, big Burke.
And it's like, what did you guys think of that stuff? Because like, I guess like you, Ash, are like new to it, so it's like, did that stuff feel natural, or was it like, oh, what the hell, what are they doing?
No, I really enjoyed the growth, because it starts off really small. I think you describing it as being a more action-based thing, I saw someone describe it as like the Terminator 2 to the Terminator, think is a really nice way of describing the game, because it feels like all the horror stuff's there, from like xenomorphy alien stuff to transpose that to zombies, but then they do it really tight and then grow and get bigger and more action-based. But you obviously have the beginning in the police station where it's tight, it's claustrophobic, you're learning who your enemies are, what's going on, Mr. X gets introduced, he's stomping around, you're like, whoa, what's going on over there? So you get all that stuff introduced, and then it, as you go on, because you've seen so much of it, you get more of them that you have to then fight and battle against, which makes it more action-based. And I think growing that and slowly developing on it was the best way to do it. And then once you get into the proper sewers with the mutants, and then the tree bit where...
I just see all the biotanical or whatever.
Yeah, the botanical stuff. Like all of that, like growing from that point and then turning it into different horror that was then claustrophobic again and grew out again. I thought that was a really nice way of continuing, like cycling it, but like spiraling it over. So you get like, oh, okay, I'm scared. Okay, now we're just going to kill everything. And then, oh, okay, I'm scared again. Now I'm going to go and kill everything.
That those weird like tree grass botanical things,
ivies.
Like the ivies are some of the only enemies where you really have to like specifically shoot them. So I guess like at that point that it's like, okay, we're going to literally challenge to see how well you've taken to the shooting at that point.
And but they will one hit kill you if they if you don't have a thing. They'll literally just bite your head off, won't they? And I was just like, oh, that's different.
They were great. I really like the design of those.
No, they're great. That leads me to my first negative point.
It's games of the year, Jules.
That's fine. I can still...
Okay.
Just because you don't have to be overtly positive about everything for it to be good.
Yes, you do.
Oh.
But you're allowed to be
negative
for now.
This is a pod run. Sorry.
I know.
You signed up for this.
Sorry. The G-spawn, the offshoot little baby ones that are in the sewer that come up and rise and try and grab you.
Oh, yeah.
They can get in the bin. like I like the design of them. I think they're great. But when you have to fight three of them and you're running through that little horrible swampy cesspit.
You mean those big mounds of essentially big poop?
Yeah, the big poop monsters.
Yeah.
And I'm just kind of I'm like, there's that to me reflects the worst part of the Resident Evil franchise, where it's just basically, hey, look, we've just chucked a load of mass together. It's just like,
I like that guy.
I don't know. It's just one of those things where I feel like as the series went on, it decided that it didn't really understand Silent. Right. Let's put Silent Hill up against Resident Evil. Right. Resident Evil was great because it was cinematic horror. Silent Hill was amazing because it was psychological horror because of what they all represented and stuff like that. And it's fantastic to farm into that. But when it came... when they moved apart further and further and further, we've now got sort of like Resident Evil 6 and 7, which was just like, it's a humanoid shape, but it's goo.
Maybe it's because I think it's because we've played a lot of them over time. Because I think if you're new to it, then that feels fresh and worthwhile.
I just think
I couldn't tell this monster apart from any of the other sort of like spawny style things.
I get that. But when you're dealing with when you're dealing with mutations, when you're dealing with the sort of horror that Resident Evil like presents. It's body horror. It's all about the horror of a transformation and things happening to you that you don't control and that sort of thing, which is a scary aspect of itself, but something that we get exposed to loads in media
as it is.
Mm-hmm. So, like, we get loads of horror films where it's about the horror of the abject and all that sort of thing. And having that in a game is still really interesting and really good. I can understand why you don't find it as scary, but I still think it's a really interesting point to have it from, as much as it doesn't need to represent anything. It represents the fear of transformation and the insides being out and things just feeling uncomfortable. For a game to thrive on atmosphere and environment, as Resident Evil does, it needs to focus on its weird, goopy enemies that are body horror.
They've like kind of gone. If they were Venn diagrams, they've always overlapped and they've always tried to do bits of each one. But they've done it to like a detriment over time. Sometimes it's just like, hey, this person transforms into a giant mold, like the end of Akira, and there's an eye on their shoulder. There's always an eye on their shoulder. But in RE2, they only really those big mound poop things that are like sort of that exemplify like you said, a giant massive stuff. They don't go too far with it, thankfully, whereas they have done in some of the older ones.
But then if you ask me what my favourite sort of encounters are, it's the Birkin encounters when he is mutating into something else. But I think it's because we can see it. We can see the direct sort of like chain of command with these like poopy monsters. They're just kind of like, they were new enemies designed for the game that replaced the giant spiders and the alligators and stuff like that.
Oh God, if it was a giant spider in the sewer.
And that's the thing, maybe that's why I was a little bit disappointed with it, because the fact that I wanted those giant spiders. Because imagine that with those graphics, how disgusting they would look.
Because they do, they change the giant alligator fight,
I'm really glad they did.
They kind of make it a bit too easy, where it's just like stick to one side of the screen and you'll auto win. Whereas it was an actual fight in the old ones. But I still, in terms of taking something that was, like you said, was assumed like a boss battle or whatever. I guess you quite like that.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
That actually leads me onto a good point, which is like the boss battles in this game. Like Resident Evil isn't really known for its boss battles. I know that there are some amazing boss encounters.
It's more of
its
boss characters, but then the actual fights are just sort of like shoot it until it dies.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, if you go back and play the first three games, like all you do is you go, okay, cool, I'm going to stand here with the best gun I've got, shoot. Oh, you've hit me, heal. Shoot. Because like, there's no point in moving. Mm-hmm. You almost can't dodge half of the attacks that are on.
Plus you're rotating move, rotate back to shoot again. Yeah.
But in this game, I can only pick out maybe like one or two examples of like an okay boss battle. For the most part, they were really good.
I thought you were going to say they were bad.
The two boss battles that I don't really like are the fight with G at the end when you're on the tram with the minigun as Claire.
Yeah. Right.
And I wasn't a huge fan of the crane.
That was
on the hardest difficulty when you're trying to do it with like minimum ammo and like two saves in the game. I'm just going, just full off.
That's one of the downsides. Because like I said, when we talked about like, the tank controls and you're sort of fighting it, and it kind of contributes to the horror, but something that is a downside of having the over-shoulder stuff is that it is bolted to your back. So when you're trying to like evade and you kind of like, rotate the whole viewpoint, run away from the thing, turn around and hope that there's some distance between the two. Yeah. And like, yeah, that boss fight hinges on trying to lure it into a specific spot, which is very hard to do when you haven't got a zoomed out enough perspective
and
to know exactly where
it is.
And you're forever like rotating and moving and rotating and
you're gonna get battered by it as soon as you're near the point
and everything just restarts again. There's a lot of different sort of movement stuff and ways that they've gone back to obviously what they try to do in RE4 and then applying that to RE2 that I think overall works, even though like there are some like clumsy bits I guess with things like that. What did you guys think of the Mr. X stuff, because it immediately made me think of Nemesis, which is what they're gonna now do.
I didn't actually like him.
Are you not a fan?
No.
Why didn't? What'd you
call him? Fedora on.
I think he's a great character. I think he's a great concept, and I think he's good for the game. And he improved my gameplay, but I didn't like him just because it was continuously the same thing, like getting hunted down. Like I was more frustrated by the time that he would find me rather than scared. Like initially, I was like, "Wow, this is really cool, getting hunted whilst I'm doing all this stuff. Mm-hmm. That's a really great concept." But as it went on, I was like, "Ooh, lay off a little bit," because it was just constant like do. I was like, "Cool, I've got to run through all the zombies again." And go
I did have
again.
One bit like that. I think loads of people had this where you eventually get the lever or the crank to move up one of the platforms inside the library, and it means that you need to go to the middle of the library and then like use this thing and then crank it and move
there's
it.
Like three or four zombies,
a bunch of zombies, and at that point obviously Mr. X is always following you, so at that point he's probably in the room with you and you're just trying to do this one thing and you can't because he's always right there. That was the only time in the whole thing where I was like, oh, please leave me alone.
He's the only one that I had a gripe with. He was the only one I was like, okay, this game is great, but Mr. X, please sir,
there's
please.
A bit is a bit later on when you go into the clock tower or something and you have to do something else inside there, and he does chase you, but then he they coded him so he doesn't come into that room.
There's a few rooms that he's not allowed into, like the safe rooms and stuff like that, which makes sense because obviously you shouldn't have him just popping in.
I love that, but he like leans in and then can't get in.
But that, but I think that's the one problem, is that there should have been a mode which allows him to come in there. Like, like as in,
there's
like,
probably
no,
a mod
like no safety or something like that, so you can just like come into any room that you're in. And I feel like that would be like the true...
I bet they probably had a whole bunch of like boardroom conversations where they were just like, initially you probably did start out going everywhere, and then it was like, well, we can't have him literally in front, because you could just save lock yourself.
Yeah, well, you'd save and then you'd start the game and
he's always there.
Right, high, sort of thing.
Because that, we, I don't know, like, I'm assuming you guys did this as well, where you're in a save room and you go to leave and he's right there, but he's on the stairs.
Yeah.
And so like you kind of feather it where you like step.
And looks.
Yeah, he turns and looks and you sort of like you step back and then he goes, he's like, oh, well, I guess you're not there then. And he goes to walk away and then you put 1 foot forward and he's like, oh, no, you are there. And he like comes back down again.
My favorite thing is that there's online forums that are described, they've come up with theories as to why he can't go in those rooms, because obviously he's a bioengineered weapon.
Right.
He's got some form of programming that from Umbrella.
Good.
And he's therefore not allowed into rooms that would have high frequency of agents that either work for Umbrella or are working on their payroll. Mm-hmm. So, for example, the development room where the first save room is, that's where Wesker would be a lot, because, as we know, he has that secret dodgy film canister in his thing. But like, it, and then another one is the Police Chief Irons' thing, who's on their payroll. So it would make sense that he wouldn't go into
that
those
totally
areas.
That works.
Like, so I mean, if you want to play it in that lore, then there you
go. They could have done with having, because they flesh out that he's this like weird, like super undercover agent that goes in with his little fedora.
Undercover,
I know, and it's like he's like 8 foot tall and he's gray, he's bright gray. But that's apparently why he looks like a 1950s detective, because he's forever undercover getting like secret documents and everything.
To be fair, he's not finished yet. He wasn't totally finished, which is why he's got the paper mache
like,
face.
Back in or whatever, and takes his fedora off. What do you guys think of the, I said it might not apply to you, Ash, as much, but like, have you seen the old designs for Claire and Leon?
I've seen the blockiness and like the, it's just the hair that I think is fantastic when I see the hair now, because I've played it since. Like, I've had a look at the old game since I've started the remake.
Mm-hmm.
But looking at their hair is the most fun thing. Like, Leon's little, like, fluffy, like, beautiful, swishy hair. Then watching the back one where it's literally just, like, his block head. Like, it's so good.
Because eventually they patched in that you can unlock those skins. You can unlock the original, like, polygonal models
Whatever. Which is just a great shout.
Yeah.
Another thing that they just showed, that the devs who made this love the franchise, because they could have easily have just gone, like, oh, yeah, we'll put some sort of paid-for customization stuff in.
Yeah.
But, like, they did really well with the costume they chose. They even put Ezra Miller in.
I know, there's a lot of
Ezra Miller's not that. It's Ezra Walker.
I was thinking Ezra Miller's an actor.
Yeah,
I believe.
Exactly.
He's not in it.
No, I wish he wasn't that. He'd be amazing.
Sneaking around.
But Ezra Walker was the original planned protagonist for Resident Evil 2, but she was scrapped. And so there was like a demo that's still floating around today where you can still play as her. So they put her costume in as a nice little reference.
Because I was going to say, what did you think of because in the old Resident Evil games, because they did such a big job of being like, okay, these are the heroes, these are the stars, like, you know, these like literally they're called like stars in the game, whatever, as well as being stars. But you know, and it was like you're playing as these like not superheroes, but these iconic action characters. For me, I in the new one, I quite like that they sort of reduced them down and said, well, they're still like capable officers and they're still like, you know, law enforcement, or they're still stars members. But they didn't feel not necessarily overpowered, but like they kind of designed them down a little bit. Everyone looks a bit more everyday, well, like it could happen to you kind of thing.
You look at Resident Evil 4. Resident Evil 4 is like over the top action,
high-kicking
and in
zombies.
5 it goes even further than that with the punching the boulder scene that everyone's now familiar with. Here, we have to remember, it was Leon's first day on the job.
Yep.
It's just a regular grunt for the raccoon police, RPD.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Claire, who is literally just searching for her brother, who obviously does have some experience from the previous game, but isn't like, you know, fully involved, as it were.
Yeah.
So I did feel like they felt like much more relatable characters. Mm-hmm. They did make a lot of stupid decisions. Like, I mean, that chain link fence when they meet up outside with the helicopter crash is like, oh, do you want to just scale that? Like, literally.
There's not even any barbed wire on it.
Like, No, don't worry about it.
We could have solved all of it. That brings me on to like the multiple playthroughs, because the original RE2 had it where it was way more of a mechanic, where like one character could leave stuff in a save for another character, in a locker, sorry, so that when you played as someone else, you can go and pick it up, and you were sharing items, and it kind of got in the way. Like, it was some of the puzzles are really hard because you might not have something from an entirely different save, whatever. But like, what do you guys think of the idea of that stuff? Because like a lot of the multiple playthroughs kind of break the timeline. Like they retcon it for whoever you're playing as at the time. Their viewpoint is what matters, and everything just kind of molds around that. But what did you think of the multiple stuff?
I think having like the A and B and the New Game Plus stuff, that was kind of the first time I remember it working so well for me. You know what I mean? Like, I don't do that many New Game Pluses, but I was like desperate to try it on this sort of thing and see from different perspectives and play as different characters and see how they react to stuff. Like, it was just interesting. I thought it was a really nice way of doing it and having two campaigns in one. So you can play through one bit and be like, whoa, I've completed Resident Evil 2. And then be like, oh my God, flip the page, there's more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, I really liked it. And that they kind of meet in and out and come together and go away again. I thought it was a nice interweaving story.
I definitely like, love the idea of it. I still enjoyed it in the moment. It was just, I remember like people comparing. It's like, well, if this scene happens from this guy's perspective and he sees this happen, then this can't happen from this person's perspective. No. And then it doesn't like line up or whatever.
I think it's too nice an idea to scrap on like minor discrepancies. As much as it would be nice to have everything flow perfectly and have plots exactly line up, we are in video game logic.
Like, oh yeah, totally.
I would still have preferred if they would have put, I felt like there was effort put into the A and B scenarios, but I would have loved it if just the B scenario was playing through the other person's A scenario with new cutscenes that were rendered to make sense for that.
Yeah.
Like I know, like, think of it as the kind of what if scenario, because that way it would have been quite interesting to see Leon interact with like Sherry.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Like that would have been interesting because that's never happened before.
Because that's the thing. Sometimes they should like that chin link fence bit. You know, you do see like, oh yeah, this is, if you're playing as Claire, it's like, well, you get to see what like from her point of view and then Leon's. But then they also have like some sequences that are like, you're going down the exact same corridor fighting the same enemy as both. And it's like, well, both these people weren't in the same position at the same time, so it doesn't really work.
I mean, but, I'm fine with it for video game logic's sake. I mean, like, it's...
I just thought if you're going to do an A and a B campaign, especially when RE2, I think, I'm pretty sure in the original RE2, they were more designated separate things.
Yes.
And like I said, they were sharing items only through a locker or whatever. That was something that like kind of didn't stick out, but I was aware of. I was just like, oh, okay, well, I've already been here, so why am I here as this other character? Or whatever.
It's going to be interesting seeing if they are going to do the Resident Evil 3 remake, because obviously we've gone...
Have you not seen the news, Jules Gill?
That it is happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing is, that's fine, but it's just a case of, like, they've gone from two characters, then now they're going to be going back down to one again?
Maybe, well, on the new box art, it's Jill Valentine and Carlos Oliveira.
They did have him, didn't they?
I don't know if they're going to do the same, like, multiple playthrough story type stuff.
Ooh, there's a lot of, like, space for them to fill with that, then, because obviously he is not in it for, like...
ages.
Yeah, for a fair amount. Fair play.
But still, I mean... In terms of the game engine, another point that I had down is like the general like gore tech. Because I remember one of the GIFs that did the rounds, or a little clip that did the rounds before launch, was someone unloading a shotgun into a zombie's chest. They fell over and then their top half crawled away from their legs and came after you anyway. Did you have any moments like that where you were like, holy words I can't see on YouTube, this is very messy and gory, but done very well?
No, exactly. I think this is where my love for the mutant stuff comes in, because I think it was so gory and so proper, like, icky. Like, everything was so visceral and the blood felt real. The zombies, like, tearing themselves apart and having faces
the
and jaws
of it.
Come up. Yeah, like, it just felt so, like, ooh, that's disgusting. That's a proper zombie. And, like, when you get bitten, that sort of thing. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I just thought it was the best that they could have done, especially when you watch the comparisons. I think there was one jaw one, which, I remember someone's jaw coming off.
Really?
I can't remember if it was from the first remake or from two, but just the comparison was enough to be like, holy smokes.
Because like, I love, I love the physics that they gave them. Because it's like, for me, like, obviously zombies are so easy to just be horde enemies. Like, there's loads of them, you're going to mow through them, like Dead Rising style or whatever. But in this, like, every single independent part of them has physics. And I remember even in the demo when they sort of like lumber towards you, and you can tell that only their chest is being willed towards you, everything else is being dragged along. And it's just like a whole new way to even do zombies.
I'd like to see the sort of how they developed it all. Like, that they did actually put like a weight point on it, and then that was the thing.
I think
it's very clever.
Yeah.
I enjoyed immensely like capping them in the knees and then watching like a leg come off and just being like, ouch. Sucks to be you, brother.
Did you spend time just seeing what the Gore-Tech did? Like, because I've seen those people just empty a shotgun until something's a torso.
You can just turn somebody into mulch. Like, it's quite disgusting, to be fair. But at the same time, the freedom to do it, it's just like, I think the worst bit is when you think you've taken out a zombie.
Oh,
you've like unloaded a few clips into its like body and torn like whatever in its face, and it's all like mangled, but then it grabs you and it does a close-up and you're like, oh God, I don't want to see my handiwork. Like, come on.
Because I guess that's like a wider thing as well about like the idea of zombies as enemies, because obviously in RE3 like Nemesis is a big deal, and you're like, and they had Mr. X in here, which I wonder if they like put him in as like a bigger deal, because then it varies things up. It doesn't mean that it's just a zombie game. I think that they do the zombies exemplarily well. That's a word. Exemplarily. example.
Yeah.
It's not a word, but we'll say
they do them really well, Jules.
Yeah, they do them really
and
well.
But I was going to say, what do you guys think of zombies being enemies in general? Because for so many games, they are just fodder enemies. Like, you know, whether it's Left 4 Dead or Dead Rising or whatever, the way that they do them is way more considered. And I really appreciated the amount of effort that was put into this.
It's definitely empowered the zombies, as it were, because, like, it's very easy to describe zombies as being pathetic. It's because they represent a pathetic human. It's kind of like the quality of everything that makes a person human in the absence of.
Yes.
So therefore, the term pathetic isn't meant like as in like a putting down thing. It's just literally like there's a shell.
Yeah, they're soulless.
And you don't have sympathy for these zombies, which I guess is probably the next thing to try and address in horror, is making you feel sorry for the things that you're killing.
Some of them, because they are so well detailed and designed and they have like everyday clothes on and stuff, and they are just sort of like just clawing towards you. That's all they're quote unquote living for.
It does
kind of come through as like sad.
There was actually one reference that made me not like emotional, but it was like a memory of like when I was younger playing this second one for the first time. And it's when you go down to this one alleyway, you see a woman wearing a red crop top and like blue, like hot shorts. I don't even know what you call
it. Hot pants.
Hot pants, that's it.
Exemplary hot pants.
She was the cover like of the Resident Evil 2, like when it was doing a load of its campaign material back in like 1998 or whenever it was. So it's kind of like looking at that one zombie design and being like, oh wow, they've updated it for this actually like
that's
oh,
like where she ended up the whole
time. Yeah, so I was like, oh, fair play.
That's what you think of zombie enemies.
I think the zombies are great. I feel like they all feel individual and they all feel like they have weight. I feel like coming up against them, there's not one that you're going to face and be like, oh, easy pickings. Like all of them feel like they've got the potential to absolutely ravage you, which is really good. I think the one bit that got me, we're talking about sympathy for them. There's a moment where you're in the jail cells, like deep down, when like, and you see them locked in their cells. Yeah. That was a bit where I was like, oh, these
guys
are
just forever stuck.
And then they unlock, and you're like, oh wait, no, get back inside.
When the first time I went through, I wasted all my ammo, threw them all through the grate. So it's like, oh, it's really sad. But no, I think they all feel individual as well, because sometimes you can face so many of the same copy over and over again. Like obviously they're similar, but like I don't know. I just feel like it's not a wave or a horde. It's like one single one at a time. Or if you're fighting three or a couple in a corridor, it feels like, oh my god.
Yeah, man. Well, it's kind of the opposite of like a World War Z. It's not a wave of them. I don't think I ever had a single duplicate. They probably are in there, but I don't feel like I shot the same one twice.
But I love the fact that there's like, if you go into a room and there's more than two of them, your heart is literally like, okay, well, I've got to really like plan this out, because like I'm going to waste like potentially 10 bullets if I shit this like guy in the chest a few times.
Yeah.
So it's like, they make them feel empowered in that sense, which is lovely.
And for me, that's one of the biggest like positives, is that they made what is a 20-year-old game like just feel fresh, and like a zombie experience feel fresh again.
It's the sound design as well.
Yes.
Like hearing the especially the female zombies. I don't know who were the voice actresses for them, but doing those screams and wails, it's like guttural. Like somebody was playing me the audio clips and was like,
it's death metal.
It was like wet. And that's I know it's weird. Is that the way to describe it? It was a wet scream, because it was coming from a throat that was kind of like gargling blood.
I liked Birkin like just sort of yelling and screaming, because he doesn't want to, at that point you fight him the first time, he doesn't want to do any of it. And like, I mean, they mostly carry that through, but like, yeah, the sound design on him as well is like he's retching and he's struggling and everything else. But yeah, I mean, in general, like we all thought that it was one of the best games of 2019. Everybody had it on their list to varying different degrees, and obviously it got to the top in the end. So yeah, closing comments, we're big fans of Resident
Definitely.
Evil.
Definitely.
But yeah, let us know anything down in the comments below of Resident Evil 2, or come find us on social media if you're listening along on the audio platforms. For now though, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast, and I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Ash Millman.
Thank you very much for having me.
And we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.